Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session for civil adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. First case on our calendar is 96-1302, Council of Smaller Enterprises versus Gates McDonald Company. Mr. O'Loughlin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I need to reserve 3 minutes to keep up, please.
Watch the time on your clock. It's fine.
We're bringing to you this morning an issue that's been litigated up and down the wall in forums throughout the country. Strangely enough, it's not up to this court, as far as I know, first impression of this court in Ohio. The court has been litigated in a number of the different districts with their variety of results. The issue really, when you get down to it, the issue in this case, I think you can say it very simply, whether a notice provision in an arbitration agreement is construed as a condition preceding to arbitration for a procedural stipulation to be observed in the conduct of the arbitration itself. In this case, getting to the specifics of it, we have a agreement between Cozy and Gates to administer a workers' comp program for the Cozy, which is an adjunct to the Greater Cleveland Growth Association. Everything went well for a few years, and then the parties decided to disagree on a number of different things. And the agreement that they were operating under provides that they agreed to an arbitration regarding all disputes and controversies arising out of the contract, provided one party, or the party seeking arbitration, gives the other party 90 days notice in writing of his intent to arbitrate, and the 90 days is to run from the time the dispute arises.
Mr. O'Loughlin, we've read the briefs and we understand that background, and I wonder if we can go directly to the one issue that's bothering me. Let's assume, just for purposes of argument, that your position is wrong, that in fact this matter should go to arbitration. Do you have some feeling that the arbitrator would not look at that, in effect, limitation period and find that it's the jurisdiction or the case is over because it was not properly brought? Why, or you just have more confidence in the courts?
That's an excellent question. It's part of my, really, my problem that's happened in this case so far. It's unfair to ask this. So let me go back, just to give you two things. Remember, when we're talking about arbitration, we're talking about letting a third party decide a dispute between parties, okay? But when you're talking about arbitrability, we're talking about who controls the jurisdiction of the arbitrator, himself or a court. That's the question you're asking me. And I say to you, quite honestly, Your Honor, you place an arbitrator in an unfair position when he decides his own jurisdiction. And you also place the party who is opposing jurisdiction in an unfair position. Now, why do I say that? I say it simply because here you're asking an arbitrator to decide his own payday, in effect, when he gets two big commercial interests tangling. There's a deep pocket, and these things usually go on for a considerable period of time, and they're a nice piece of business for an operator.
Would your distinction be that there's, obviously we let trial courts, or our rule is that courts determine their own jurisdiction. And I hadn't thought about that part of the argument until right now, but would it go on then, the argument be, because arbitration, implicit in the word arbitration is finality, non-appealability, that in fact if a trial court determines jurisdiction, it can always be appealed, but you couldn't from an arbitrator's decision.
That's right, Your Honor. I didn't bargain for an arbitrator unless preconditioned with some problems. Now we're saying, I'm saying precondition was not satisfied, and the courts are saying, it's all right, the arbitrator's going to decide it anyway, so no matter what happens, I get an arbitrator. And that isn't right. And it isn't right from the arbitrator's point of view, because it attaches a stigma on his ruling. With a court, you have no problem. You are going to get paid what you decide for me or for Anna Maria. It doesn't make any difference. An arbitrator, as I indicated earlier, is in a different position. In addition to that, you've got a further problem that's involved in this, because if you let the arbitrator decide his own jurisdiction, and then you make the appeal from his decision, then I wrote into all these things that the court on appeal is going to give all this favoritism to the decision of the arbitrator.
Let me ask you one more procedural question, then I'm finished. I want to get to that merit issue, and I've got a procedural question. The trial court determined and refused to refer the matter to arbitration.
That's right, sir.
The Court of Appeals in 2-1 decision reversed that.
That's right, sir.
Is the refusal to stay pending arbitration or to refer to arbitration a final appealable order?
I would feel that if it's going to the courthouse, it's supposed to probably be a final appealable order.
It's going to the courthouse.
What I'm saying is a court, but the court in this instance decided that the matter should not go to arbitration.
Right, the trial court made that decision.
Right.
Now, does that decision determine the action?
In this instance, it would, Your Honor, because that's another... That's another part of the problem here, Your Honor. I think the arbitration aspect of this case is not entwined in any way with the merits. So the court can make a decision as to whether or not the arbitrator has jurisdiction to even start an arbitration proceedings, and that's the end of it. If he decides, as he did in the lower court in this case.
So in this case, you think it was fit into 250502, the final appealable order section, because it determines the action and prevents a judgment?
That's right, sir. It does.
It really doesn't, because he could do it, the trial court could rule that it should go to arbitration.
Right, that's a different question. And if they rule that, that's the point I'm complaining about. If he rules that they go to arbitration, Your Honor, and I can't get at that ruling until after the arbitration is over,
mm-hmm.
and then I come to you and challenge the right of the arbitrator, then you turn around and say to me, yeah, but we only look at an arbitrator's decision in a very narrow scope. And
but you're reversing.
You're stuck.
You're reversing the facts. You're saying you can't. The question here is, you won in the trial court. It's
I
a
did.
Question that there was not going to be arbitration
right.
on this issue.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, maybe I'm missing something here.
Didn't the trial court rule that this is not going to arbitration?
That's right.
Okay. That means you won.
I'm ahead.
Then why in the world are you arguing that you won't have any right to appeal? Because that would be the person who would be losing that would have the right to appeal.
Yes, but put the shoe on the other foot here.
I understand that.
And that's
but
that's
where
you not get hurt.
Well, but the legal issue is the denial of the of referral to arbitration a final appealable order.
I would say it should be.
Okay.
Now, we can get into this.
Could you appeal a denial by the arbiter of the case going to arbitration?
I don't think you can the way the law sits right this moment, unless you folks say we can after you get through this case.
But this case went to the arbiter to begin with. And he said, no, you're out of luck, you can't go to arbitration, you would have no recourse.
That's the way I view the law at the present time, Your Honor. And you know, let me stay right on this point just a little bit longer. I don't want to shoot my own time here because there's other things. But you know, the arbitrator itself, the inclination of the arbitrator to assume jurisdiction is very great. That there was an old bookie in Cleveland one time that used to say, where monetary interest is involved. Maybe the race doesn't go to the swift and the balance is strong, but man, that's the way you got to bet on. And that's what you have here with an arbitrator. I mean, the arbitrator may be perfectly objective, but the temptation not to be objective in a close issue is very strong.
If your client hadn't thought of all those things, counsel, and entered into this very, a contract with very broad arbitration language nonetheless, even with all the flaws in the concept of arbitrating and disputes.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. This is a contract. And I have a contract to the law. The contract law says where you have a general provision, which we have, it says everything goes to arbitration, provided. And then we've got a limitation.
Yeah.
And the limitation should be brought over the general.
That's a good point, because, so Bob, because it doesn't say provided. So it says either party may.
But provided goes before that.
Does it say, I thought that it
said provided. It says that this law, we're going to arbitrate on everything provided. One party notifies the other. And that's just what Judge Patton said in his dissent. He said it's perfectly clear. Now, just hurry, oh my God, look at the history of the arbitration law when you're deciding this case. Arbitration was originally, you know, the courts have given such dividends to arbitration. The new thing is arbitration is switched, arbitration since judicial economy got less arbitration. So everything that has arbitration in the contract seems to end up with an arbitrator. And that isn't contract law. And it's common. You find in these courts, for example, they were in the position I had, the circuits are split. I would say between 5 and 5, we have federal circuits there. Virginia, Connecticut, Texas, Florida, and one of the other states have considered this question down my way. There's an equal, maybe not equal number, but I know there are a number of cases that would come down, they bring the other proposition. So it's a broadly litigated thing here. But the history, if you look at the history, and we cite the case in the brief, the Burke case, the federal court, they stated, we're not to look at that. That's not the key here, as to whether it's expedient, quick, and so forth. It's, did the contract parties agree to it? Because the old, in jump until 1925, the reason the Arbitration Act was passed in the first place was the courts were saying, we're not going to honor arbitration agreements. It takes away the jurisdiction of the courts. And so arbitration agreements were just pieces of paper. After the statute was enacted, the law is that arbitration is like any other contract and has to be treated like any other contract. And if you do treat it like every other contract, you've got to give credence to the provider. In addition to that, look, two key Supreme Court cases in the United States, I think both of them are my favorite. That's Wiley versus Livingston, Brothers, it's cited in the briefs and the very recent first options of Chicago versus Kaplan, which I think is exactly what I'm saying to you here today. What first option says is unless, when you read an arbitration agreement, there is clear and unmistakable evidence that the parties intended to send to arbitration the arbitrability issue, then it is not to go. And that's just the reverse of the positive assurance test that the courts have been throwing out with such liberality. And I think it overrules the positive assurance test, at least in the federal forum. Now, whether you folks are going to agree with me, it's a different question. But I do think it's very good precedent and suggest to you that you look very closely at those two cases. Because even in Wiley, which was decided 30 years earlier, the court made the situation that a matter is not a procedural question to go to the arbitrator unless the procedural question grows out of the dispute and two bears on its final disposition. In this case, you can decide the arbitration agreement without ever getting in to the merits of the case, which is what does everybody already put in mind.
Thank you, Mr. O'Loughlin. Ms. Spira.
The issue before the court is not new or novel. The issue is whether the parties agreed when they executed their service agreement in 1992 to submit the dispute between them to arbitration. As the Court of Appeals has already determined, they did agree to do so. Neither the express language of the service agreement, the cases that Coach relies on, nor the statutes that Coach relies on compel a result different than the correct result which was reached by the Court of Appeals. The decision of the Court of Appeals is not only supported by the express language of the contract and relevant, well-established case law, it is also consistent with reasonable business practices and Ohio's strong public policy favoring arbitration and encouraging resolution of disputes on their merits. The proposition of law urged by COSI, on the other hand, will undoubtedly upset well-established precedent that many individuals, companies, unions, and others have relied on in engaging in relationships and executing arbitration agreements all across the state.
Do you agree, Council, that the language in the service agreement relating to bringing, for demanding within 90 days, demanding arbitration within 90 days, is a jurisdictional requirement of that contract to bring it within, to make it arbitrable?
We do not believe that's jurisdictional, but that is a condition really having to relate to the management of the arbitration process. And the reason we believe that that's the purpose of it is if you look at the arbitration clause itself, it's a very broad clause. And there are three components to it. Basically, they're set forth in two paragraphs, 7.7a and 7.7b of the agreement. 7.7a is the scope. That's basically what the parties agreed to arbitrate. And if you look at that, it states in part that the parties agreed to arbitrate all disputes and controversies of every kind and nature between Gates, McDonald, and Cosi that may arise as to the existence, construction, validity, interpretation or meaning, performance, non-performance, enforcement, operation, breach, continuance, or termination of the agreement. Then, under the next five subsections, which are subsumed within Section 7A, there are matters relating to the mechanism or the mechanics of the arbitration. For instance, the 90-day provision is there. Also, there's a provision that a hearing should occur within 60 days, that the arbitrators must be paid by the party.
Is it significant, then, that the language of that contract says, after the scope paragraph ends with the language, shall be submitted to arbitration pursuant to the following. Is that significant that it doesn't say provided the following is met?
We feel that that is significant, Your Honor, because the pursuant to language, in our opinion, is nothing more than basically say, you know, these are the procedures that will be followed, or these are the procedures, this is the way that the parties envision the agreement. It does not create an express exclusion, which is what COSI is arguing. If you look at the cases that COSI relies on for its proposition, there are express exclusions to arbitration. For instance, the Moon case, which is one of the decisions that they rely on heavily. In that arbitration agreement, it specifically states that if you don't do this within 15 days, if you don't appeal grievance, under the collective bargaining agreement within 15 days, then there is a conclusive presumption that that grievance is not arbitrable.
Are you saying that in the wording of the contract that you have, there are no limitations on the ability to go to arbitration?
No, Your Honor, we're not saying that. We're just saying that 7A is all something, the entire paragraph 7A, the parties have agreed to have the arbitrator determine. And then once we get to arbitration...
What does a 90-day period mean?
The 90-day period is a procedural prerequisite to accessing the arbitral forum, if you will. And basically, the significance of that, whether it's a mandatory condition, whether it's excused or can be waived, are all issues that go to arbitration pursuant to the party's agreement. Gates McDonald is not taking the position that there's no time requirement at all, that we could have.
Is there anything in the contract that indicates any disputes can be referred to the court to be determined.
The contract does not specify that anything can be submitted to the court. However, I think you can imagine scenarios that don't arise under the contract. For instance, if there was an assault by one employee against another employee or something like that.
Is there wording in the contract that says all disputes, questions, whatever arises from the party shall be answered by the arbitration?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's set forth in 7.7A.
And that also includes whether or not the 90-day provision has been
That's right. It includes what the 90-day provision means specifically and whether it has been met. And the reason I point out it includes what it means is the 90-day provision only specifies controversy. It doesn't refer to a dispute. So the parties have 90 days after a controversy.
Controversy and dispute are two different animals.
We believe they are for purposes of triggering the 90-day method of here. Gates McDonald has always interpreted the term controversy as used in the agreement to mean something more than just a recognition that there's a difference of opinion between the parties. If that was how this provision is interpreted, it would be virtually impossible and I would say impractical, unreasonable from a business concept to know. You'd almost have to have somebody keep time every time there's a discussion and there's a dispute on something as we start the clock to.
What is the provision, the 90-day provision? What is your opinion as to what it was put in there for?
Why it was put in there? It was put in there so that there would be a time frame within which the parties should try to seek by third-party arbitration to submit their dispute.
You specifically said should, not must.
Well, the language in the agreement says may.
Should means, though, you can do it if you want or you don't have to.
I mean, I don't know how to say, I mean, we're...
Did you use the word should?
The language of the agreement says may. Should I have used the word should?
Well,
I probably should have.
That's even more, may is even more loosey than should.
We agree. That's why it's even...
So then why, if the wording is may, why have the provision? If the 90-day provision is not mandatory, well, what use is it?
Well, one reason that may be in there, and again, the interpretation of that provision is for the arbitrator. I mean, that's the primary issue. And there are different ways that can be interpreted. And one reason the may be in there, as pointed out in Cosey's brief, is that it may mean that you don't have to arbitrate necessarily, but that if you want to arbitrate, you may do so, and this is the mechanism to do it. And that if you choose arbitration, that's what you need to do. So the may mean that, Your Honor. We didn't get to that. I mean, no evidence was submitted below as to what the interpretation of the agreement was.
You said it's all up to the arbitrator. Now, let me change the scenario here. This, I understand your brief. You don't exactly conclude that, or you don't agree that your pleadings acknowledge the clock starting to run on a certain date out of there, but let's get around it. Say this dispute unfolds, and more letters go back and forth, and the level of incrimination gets intense, and CEOs or whomever, people in authority, send letters saying they're going to pay up or we're going to file suit. Maybe specifies, we plan to, we've instructed our attorneys, if you don't pay X, which we believe is what you owe us, we plan to file an action in the Cuyahoga County County Police Court to seek recovery of the monies owed. If it waived off at that point, arbitration, or does, if later on, the lawyer say, oh, we still have the right to arbitrate, does the arbitrator still get to determine jurisdiction, or can they at that point do what they did here, go and try to get a court to declare the rights of the parties?
I think, Your Honor, that you're trying to pin down when the time is triggered, is that correct?
Or if there are any circumstances under which a court, rather than an arbitrator, can determine who has jurisdiction.
The answer to that is that once there is a controversy, the 90-day starts to run, and the interpretation or controversy, we believe, is that there has to be some concrete determination as to what the issues are that are in dispute, if you will. Under the circumstances here, as you saw from the letters that are attached to some of the paperwork, we started out with a number of different disputes that were working toward whittling it down, and ultimately, after the invitation came from Posey to Gates McDonald, basically said, let's sit down, let's try to resolve this, let's try to avoid a controversy, you know, let's try to do this before we reach impasse. At that point, once we went to that meeting on April 5th, and this was not resolved, we knew what the final issues were, if you will. At that point in time, there was a concrete determination or rejection of the position by the people in authority to do
that. But that relates to your argument as to when the clock starts running. My question is there any circumstance? You seem to be saying that the only person that can determine jurisdiction is an arbitrator.
That's based on this agreement, Your Honor, and you're saying, well, is there any reading of this agreement that the court could...
Or any fact pattern that unfolds that would take it out of arbitration.
Well, let's put it this way. We don't believe that we waived our right to arbitrate and we were then brought into court to determine that. We think that the court can, I mean, that it is possible for the court to determine on remand, if you will, that if this was not an arbitrable issue, then go to, if we waived our right to arbitration, that does not necessarily mean we waived our right to pursue all remedies, because I don't think the contract says that. And then the court can make a determination as to whether or not we can go on with the merits of the claim. I'm not certain that I'm still answering your question.
Let me ask you another question. You both have argued on the so-called merits issue whether Gates McDonald requested arbitration within 90 days. And the Court of Appeals, as you know, remanded that, so we don't make a decision on that. We don't need to, if we were to hold in your favor, if we were to affirm, we don't need to decide that issue either, do we? We probably shouldn't, should we? Or what's your view on that? Well, should this court decide whether Gates McDonald requested arbitration within 90 days pursuant to 7.7?
No, Your Honor, that's correct. This court need not decide that. This court need only determine whether or not the parties agreed to submit that issue to the arbitrator's most of the court in the first instance.
That's the legal issue. That's the contract interpretation issue, I guess. The other is factual, which should be decided by someone else.
That's correct, Your Honor. Another point that I'd like to raise is that in addition to the contractual duty that Posey states the court has in the first instance to determine these types of issues, it also relies on a statutory duty, and it refers to the Ohio Arbitration Act statute. The Ohio Arbitration Act statutes are not designed to do what Posey is doing with them here, and that is to avoid arbitration. They were designed to give the court or to empower courts with the ability to enforce arbitration agreements. In addition to that, the language that Posey relies on in those statutes, which is 2711.02 and .03, is language that if you are in default in proceeding with arbitration, then the court is not to order arbitration, and that's a misreading of those statutes. The default in proceeding to arbitration language means that a court is to look at whether the party who is requesting the stay or requesting the compulsion to arbitration has refused to go to arbitration or has otherwise acted inconsistently with its rights to arbitrate, because then it shouldn't get the benefit of going to arbitration. If it failed to go before a review and had to get dragged into court, I see that my time is up.
Let me ask you one last question. What's your response to Mr. Laughlin's suggestion that there's a, he didn't use, this is my term, he didn't use it, but that there's perhaps a subtle conflict in asking the arbitrator to decide whether this is an arbitrable issue or not, that the arbitrator might be expected to always say yes, because that means the arbitrator has business. What's your response to that?
My response to that is, for decades, arbitrators have been deciding those types of issues that, you know, the case law would bear out, particularly in the collective bargaining area, that if the parties agree to allow the arbitrators to determine their arbitrability, then that's for the arbitrators to determine. And after you have an arbitration award, you always have the ability to go into court and to have that confirmed or vacated. So if Mr. O'Loughlin's client was to go to arbitration and lose on this issue, then he would have the ability under the Ohio Arbitration Act to go to court and try to have that vacated.
That's a pretty limited appeal, though, isn't it?
It is limited. Thank you. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Severa. Mr. Laughlin, you saved a minute and a half of your time.
I'd like to emphasize here, in my judgment in this case, we should prevail, regardless of how you decide this case, for a couple of reasons. One, you can decide it's a condition preceding, as we believe you should, under the first option, clear and unmistakable intent to send arbitration to an arbitrator, arbitrability to an arbitrator. Here with the proviso, I just don't see how in heaven's world you can say there's a clear and unmistakable intent that we want an arbitrator to decide arbitrability. It's beyond me. Maybe you all can see it, but I should keep.
But if it were to decide whether or not it's a condition proceeding, one has to construe the language of the service agreement.
Yes, gentlemen. Just as we do. But you also have to apply contract law. That's what I tried to make with you in the first instance.
Right.
You have a proviso that limits a general, you have to apply contract law on that basis. You can't ignore it.
Yes.
And that's what the courts have been doing in these arbitration cases. And that bothers me.
But I mean, doesn't that seem to fit within the language of the contract, where who should decide what the words of the contract mean?
That's not what the first option says, and that's one thing I'm urging you to look at, please. But the first option, where it says you have to clearly and unmistakably show it, and with a proviso in there, I don't see how that could mean. The other thing I'd like to say, and I think we, even if you should disagree with me on that, I think the judicial admissions in this case show that there's nothing left to send to an arbitrator. In other words, you have to read it. We could argue about it forever, but I've never gotten more clearly than a judicial admission in a case where they say specifically, yes, a disputed controversy arose within 90 days of February. We made the allegation and pleadings in file. They admitted that there was a controversy in existence in February of 94. 140 days later, they requested arbitration. So on the specific facts of this case, I think you should decide in our favor. I offer you that. I also ask you to look at the statute very early. I do think the statutes have application here, because both of the statutes demonstrate that a court takes a look at the proceedings and decides whether or not there's a requirement to go to arbitration. And that's what we need. That's what we're asking for in this case.
You've used your time, Mr. Laughlin.
I always seem to understand.
Thank you. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.